Well, allegations of corruption are plaguing Chinese infrastructure projects worldwide, including a collapsed 33-story building in Bangkok linked to a Chinese firm. Now, Thai police have detained four Chinese nationals attempting to apparently remove files from the site, raising cover-up fears.
A tragic collapse, a city in shock, and now a new twist. Chinese nationals caught in the act, removing critical documents from the rubble. But who are they, and what secrets do they carry?
I'm right outside the collapse site, where it was supposed to be a state audit office here in Bangkok. This is now a crime scene. As on March 29th, four Chinese nationals were apprehended trying to retrieve 32 documents illegally.
Thai investigators are probing whether these documents are linked to the collapse. The suspects are subcontractors under a joint venture with Italian Thai Development Public Company Limited. This isn't the first time Chinese companies have been under scrutiny. From questionable construction practices to legal battles over safety violations, their global track record raises concerns. In the Philippines, the China Communications Construction Company has been barred by the World Bank for 8 years due to alleged fraudulent bidding on a highway contract. In Myanmar, the same company was involved in the new Yangon city project and was accused of bribery and controversial land selection. In Bangladesh, China Harbour Engineering was blacklisted after being accused of offering a bribe to a Bangladeshi official. In Georgia, Poland and Israel, there have been concerns of corruption and security risks with the China Railway Tunnel Group. In Bangkok, the collapse of a building has uncovered more than just rubble. It has exposed a web of questions still waiting to be answered.
The four suspects, who are reportedly from China, have reportedly claimed that they were trying to retrieve documents for an insurance claim. But it could be more than just paperwork. It could lead to evidence connecting this site to a major fraud. With camera person Rohit Vishwakarma, this is Vishal Vivek reporting for NDTV World in Chatuchak, Bangkok.
Well, it's not just this particular example where there are allegations of corruption, documents being taken away. In fact, there have been several concerns which have been raised on Chinese construction activity. So what we thought we'd do is highlight a few of those and look at what appears to be more than just a trend. It's actually a pattern. Let's start with Bangladesh. Now, Bangladesh blacklisted the China Harbour Engineering Company, CHEC. The CHEC alleged officials bribed Bangladeshi officials to secure contracts. That's part of the allegations. The CHEC was also involved in key infrastructure projects across the subcontinent. It contributed, for example, to Sri Lanka's Hambantota port development. They also played a role in Pakistan's Gwadar port project. Both of these are of significant strategic concern to India. But let's focus a little bit more on the corruption angles. In Pakistan, the Multan Metro project faced corruption allegations. A Chinese firm falsely claimed involvement in the $300 million project. The firm inflated its financial records, allegedly, to deceive investors. In Malaysia, the 1MDB scandal implicated Chinese state-owned firms. Chinese firms were booked for their role or their alleged role in this scandal. Reports indicate the costs of infrastructure projects was inflated. Reports have linked a former prime minister to this corruption. Reports suggest a political quid pro quo was involved. Reports claim access to Malaysian ports was offered in return for inflated project costs. In Kazakhstan, a pipeline construction project involved an alleged kickback scheme. A report alleges Kazakhstan's president was apparently involved in this corruption allegation. A report also states that project costs were inflated. This report says that funds were apparently diverted from the project. Now, the story also ties the corruption networks to the Belt and Road Initiative of China. That's a huge initiative. We'll talk about that. In Congo, meanwhile, the Siko Mines deal has been linked to corruption. Reports state that Chinese state-owned businesses paid bribes, and reports allege that the Congolese president, Joseph Kabila, was bribed. These are allegations, but appear in strong reports. Reports also note that $3 billion in infrastructure was promised, only $1 billion was delivered. Meanwhile, on the other side of the planet, Ecuador, the Coca-Codo-Sinclair hydroelectric dam has been labeled a scam. Reports claim officials, including very senior ones, were bribed. The dam has over 17,000 structural cracks, apparently. It's located near an active volcano. It operates at limited capacity due to its location. Now, what we've tried to do over here is to highlight several of these international concerns. I'm now joined by Dr. Brahma Chalani, strategic affairs expert. I'm joined by Einar Tangen. He's a political affairs commentator. We've also got Jonah Blank and Glenn Carl with us. Thank you all very much for being with us. I think, Dr. Chalani, the point that we were trying to make in raising those examples is that it's not just about the allegations which have been raised in this building collapse in Bangkok. In fact, there appears to be several examples of alleged construction linked with major Chinese infrastructure attempts. Is that also a pattern that you have detected?
Well, let's begin with Bangkok. It's a city with some 200 skyscrapers. How come only one skyscraper collapsed? Engineers have found no structural damage in the other skyscrapers from the earthquake. The collapse of this unfinished 30-story tower magnified the impact of the earthquake in Bangkok. Bangkok, we should not forget, is located more than 1,000 kilometers from the epicenter of the earthquake in Myanmar. But for the collapse of this high-rise building, the damage from the earthquake in Bangkok would have been minimal. Now, this Chinese state-owned company that led the consortium in building this skyscraper has been heavily involved in China's Belt and Road Initiative. Now, corruption and shoddy construction have significantly impacted the BRI, contributing to its loss of momentum in several ways. China itself has acknowledged the problems, the shoddy construction, the corruption, and it has begun to exercise greater scrutiny over BRI projects. Corruption has inflated BRI project costs, leading to higher debt burdens for recipient countries. Many projects have been awarded without transparent bidding processes, facilitating bribery and kickbacks. And this has reinforced debt trap diplomacy concerns. The perception that China intentionally traps countries in debt so as to damage their financial viability. And then there are these concerns about poor project quality, shoddy right. construction, often due to corruption and lack of oversight, results in projects that are unsafe, inefficient, and prone to premature failure. And this is what we, you know, this is what the Bangkok tower collapse illustrates.
Okay. Hold on for half a second, sir. Let me just take that across to Einar Tangen, who's with us. Sir, I think one of the questions being raised is how transparent are project financing and contract awards involving Chinese firms? I'll tell you why. Many Chinese infrastructure projects, for example, the $13 billion East Coast Rail Link in Malaysia, were awarded through government-to-government deals without competitive bidding, raising questions about contracts are inflated to allegedly include kickbacks. You know, that's something that's been alleged in the 1MDB scandal, where the role of a Chinese company hinted at cost padding, in a sense, to bail out a troubled fund.
Well, I know you'll be shocked to hear that there is corruption out there, but, you know, the majority of cases that you've mentioned and also Dr. Chalani involved the governments themselves, yes. Not China. They're the ones who are running these projects, and they're the ones who insist on a no-bid contract or negotiating. China is becoming more and more wary of government-to-government loans simply because of these problems. There's often excessive demands for kickbacks and bribes and things like this. And state-owned enterprises in the past have sometimes given in to those. And the Chinese government has punished them. I mean, everyone would have to admit that the Chinese take corruption very, very seriously. There are no people in their Congress who have criminal cases against them, nor do they have a president who has 43 criminal convictions. So this is a problem. The Chinese government will get to the bottom of it. If those people were taking files in an effort to cover up, they're going to face extremely harsh penalties.
Jonah Blank, there's also this concern about so-called signature bonuses. And I mean, again, let me give you an example. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, there's the Siko Mines deal. It again involved China closely. Apparently, $55 million were given in signature bonuses. That vanished, apparently funneled into the inner circle of the top leadership, suggesting that these funds meant as goodwill or incentives may have been siphoned off by local, elites in collusion with Chinese firms. This is just yet another example, but do you see this as, involving parties outside the Chinese companies itself, or do you see this as an effort by Beijing to hard sell, their infra products, their solutions in order to have a larger stake around the world?
Yes, and Vishnu, your report very well outlines some of the very real dangers of the way that China is operating its Belt and Road Initiative, or the One Belt, One Road, whatever one label one wishes to call it. One sometimes sees the idea of corruption as a victimless crime. I'm paying a kickback to get one up on my competitor, or we're just taking money from the government coffers. But that's not the way things really work. People don't give a massive bribe and then go on to do a wonderful job. They give a massive bribe quite frequently because they want to cut corners in ways that harm real people. If this building in Bangkok had been fully occupied when it came down, that would have been tens of thousands potentially of dead people just because of a kickback. And this is the point. If the Chinese companies are doing this, don't face any legal consequence in the country, like Thailand, where they've paid a bribe, presumably, they're not going to face it back home because the Chinese system does not actually punish corrupt people unless the people at the top of the system decide for their own political reasons that they want that person punished.
Aina Tangan, would you like to respond to that?
Yeah, Noah likes to take a dim view of China. I don't think that tens of thousands of people would have died. But yeah, this is an issue, but it is not the issue that he's talking about. China offers the lowest prices on infrastructure. They have accomplished the most amazing infrastructure projects. And even Noah would have to admit that. I mean, the kind of bridges and major projects they've done and the speed in which they've done it and the safety record for most part of it. But the problem is when these companies go abroad and they're trying to deal with governments who are less than honest. And, India, of all places, can attest to that. You had 50, 60 different major infrastructure failures last year alone, bridges, overpasses, buildings, etc. And it involved corruption. So this is not something new. And in terms of the U.S., my goodness, the U.S. pays more in fines for all the kind of corruption that it's involved with, from building to finance, than anybody. So I take Noah's ideas with a grain of salt. He's not in a position to really be talking, preaching about all of these things. But it is serious, and contrary to what he says, anybody who's involved in corruption overseas does go to jail. This is not a situation like in India, where you have 251 out of 543 people in the Lok Sabha facing criminal charges. This is China is very, very much on the up and up.
Vishnu, can I respond to that, please?
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Yes. The comment about the United States is well taken. In fact, the United States had, until about 2 months ago, punished any American companies that gave bribes overseas. The legislation is the Corrupt Foreign Practices Act. Not every country has that. For example, France does not. And Donald Trump specifically ordered that his Justice Department stop enforcing the Corrupt Foreign Practices Act. The United States has gotten much, much more corrupt in the past 2 months, and indeed in the past 8 years or so, than it had been in the past. That's exactly the point. Companies that give bribes typically do so in ways that hurt the public interest. And any effort to take that back, to not punish companies like that, hurts everyone. In the United States, we have become a much more corrupt nation. China is and has been a much more corrupt nation than most other countries. If you just look at the Transparency International Index, if you just look at the corruption language in China itself, I really don't think you can make the case that China is a leader in clean government, or that corruption is not a major problem.
Okay. I just wanted to go across to Glenn Carl. Sort of looking at beyond just the prism of corruption, to look at the role of China in sort of development activities across the world, one of the models they follow is debt structures. My question is, what role do debt structures play in facilitating corruption? Why? Because, China has resource-backed loans. For example, Ecuador, $1.7 billion. It's an oil repayable loan for Coca-Cola Sinclair. It often locks countries into long-term debt. There's the entire Hambantota port in Sri Lanka, which China now has a large amount of control over, because Sri Lanka is unable to pay for that. This seems to indicate a certain strategy of drawing countries into a long-term debt which they are unable to pay off. Thereby, China enhances its influence in these countries. I mean, that's what my reading is. I don't know if you agree. Glenn Carl.
Well, yes, there's been a lot of talk and anxiety, certainly, since the beginning of the Belt and Road Initiative and the continuing rise of China in influence and wealth and international role, about what the strategic objectives and possible reality of using debt to behind the scenes influence, if not to coerce. I don't think we need to go there. We don't need to speak about intent. I can't prove what Xi Jinping's intent or Chinese intent is with that regard. But that's secondary, actually, to the fact, the reality, that this is what happens when you have an opaque series of structures that add up to what you describe. So you have the Belt and Road Initiative is opaque by design. The bribery law that China did pass in 2011 has not been very vigorously enforced, with the exception of against those entities, public PLA-owned companies or private companies, and individuals in the political system who are viewed, have been viewed as threats or potential rivals to Xi Jinping and the supremacy of the Chinese Communist Party, as Xi Jinping wishes to see it function or work. And then you have the Chinese companies worldwide are among the least transparent in the world. And the Chinese banks also are the least transparent. So whatever the intent, the result of all of these partially intentional, partially structural opacities, if that's a word, opaqueness, add up to, yes, Bangladesh and Pakistan and Angola and Peru and Ecuador and all of the specific companies find themselves squeezed and subject to pressure. That's just the reality. And then the other reality is the collapsing building that you'll see because the standards are not enforced. And this is, as the gentleman said before, why the United States, up until 2 months ago, we have what we have in the White House now, has always pushed for. And I worked on myself, the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. The counter argument to us was, well, this is how the world works. Unless you grease someone's palm, nothing will happen. And that may well be true, but it is better. The United States had decided until 2 months ago, and much of the world also agreed, to have rigorous practices and clear, verifiable standards for financially and in the industry than to have the corruption that leads to falling buildings and distorted government decisions.
Aina Tangen, you're welcome to respond to that. But, you know, also my question, if you don't mind, it's one thing to talk about corruption and, you know, how these projects are happening, whether they're being aggressively pushed by the Chinese government at any cost, or is it a part of, you know, influence enhancement of Beijing? For example, how do port investments, you know, enhance China's maritime power projection? Chinese firms, you know, have acquired stakes in strategic ports such as Piraeus in Greece. I mentioned Hambantota. There's Dorale in Djibouti. You know, are these investments meant to secure maritime trade routes, or are these essentially, you know, with do they have a military premise? What exactly is the goal over here?
Well, you can speculate and ask all the questions you like, but you know, let's look at the facts. GDP in the rest of the world, including India, has risen precipitously at the same time that the developed world has gone down. And this has been during the period of the Belt and Road. China's invested $1 trillion. They've mapped out a framework which includes the rest of the world as opposed to ignoring it. I mean, just think of it. The first port on the western side of the South America in Peru was completed. Prior to that, you only had ones in Mexico, and then, of course, the one that, who knows, will be controlled by the United States in the terms of the Panama Canal. China has been going out and recruiting people with the idea that if you if you build roads, you build ports, airports, railways, you can do trade. You can get your minerals and your agriculture out. You can bring in companies that are going to do work and provide jobs. If that's being opaque, well, the world needs more opaqueness. The United States has, in essence, ignored everybody. The extent they're getting involved, as in with the Philippines, when they told people falsely that if they took the Chinese vaccine, they would turn into alligators. They didn't really care that a lot of Filipinos died because they didn't take the vaccine. But, you know, these are the types of things. And, you know, they justify it saying, well, we're getting at China. China's a threat to us. And it doesn't really matter who gets in between. And this is what I see with this Belt and Road initiative attack. It's something that the world needs. Where is the rest of the world? I mean, you know, where was Europe and America in terms of helping these countries rise up? Nowhere. They're just post-colonial countries who are trying to live off what they had accumulated before, like France, buying uranium yellow cake at 20 cents euro a pound and selling it for 200 euros a pound in the open market.
Okay. Dr. Chilani, last word to you. There's also this concern that there are projects, Chinese projects, concentrated in geopolitically sensitive regions. For example, in Kyaupikyu port in Myanmar, that's near the Andaman Islands, that's obviously hugely sensitive for India. There are other areas as well. You know, I mean, I mentioned Djibouti earlier on and you know, Indian Ocean security. Is this an effort at encircling nations that China considers, you know, a foe or a threat? You can make the same argument in the South China Seas.
Well, China's death trap diplomacy, bankrolled by the Belt and Road Initiative, has broader objectives. It's not merely to load developing countries with unsustainable debts so as to extract economic and political concessions. China uses death trap diplomacy for a variety of purposes, extending from extracting strategic concessions or compliance on foreign policy matters. At times, China has used a borrowing country's debt crisis to compel it to cede strategic assets. Assets, for example, Tajikistan in 2011, in exchange for ceding over 1,100 square kilometers of strategic territory in the Pamir Mountain region, China wrote off Tajikistan's debt. So there are a variety of purposes for which the BRI is has proved useful for China. But I think the Bangkok tower collapse, that collapse and the damage to the BRI's reputation is going to be huge. The damaged reputation and the loss of trust. The fact is that corruption, debt traps, environmental damage have attracted increasing international scrutiny of the BRI. But the BRI, even before the Bangkok tower collapse, had lost momentum. It was facing growing headwind.
Okay.
But now, after that, you know, one single tower collapse in Bangkok and the whole focus being on the shoddy construction by Chinese state-owned company, I think the reputational damage would be hard to repair.
All right. We leave it over there, gentlemen. Thank you very much for being with us. Larger questions on China's infrastructure goals and the link to alleged corruption, not just in Thailand, but perhaps elsewhere as well. We've been talking about the situation in Thailand because of the earthquake. And of course, we're looking at a different angle today. But I spent some time today looking at Myanmar as well in terms of the damage which has been caused. Remember, the Indian Army, our National Disaster Relief Force, are working. There are more than almost 2,000, if not more, people who've lost their lives as a result of the earthquake. What we can now bring you is some satellite imagery, which actually points to the to damage which has taken place. We worked on this satellite imagery. Now, this is the Inwa Bridge in Sagaing. Sagaing, we've pointed it out on the map over there and where exactly it is located. This image on top is, you know, it's got about a dozen odd spans. On the 23rd of March, 2025, as you can see, you know, it was entirely functional. And then on the 29th of March, you know, the spans have broken and as a result of the earthquake. Let's go to the next image. And, you know, I mean, it's fairly striking. Again, in the Sagaing area, the Mashi Khana Pagoda on top when it was intact, and over here a couple of days later when it was completely destroyed as a result of the earthquake. We'll bring you more examples of this. Again, this is the very well-known and the historic Mahamuni Pagoda in Mandalay. The image below is, and let's just zoom into this image, this is after it's been destroyed, right? And what was it before it was destroyed? Just zoom in over here to the image on top. This is when it was okay, and the structure was actually intact. Now just tilt the camera down, and this is what it looks like now after it's been destroyed. Let's move to the next couple of images, again, to give you an idea. Again, this is the Anada Pagoda and Pindaya Monastery in Mandalay. This is the before image on the 23rd of March when it was intact. And just look at the situation over here when it's, you know, it's been entirely destroyed. Pan down a little bit more. As you can see, it's been entirely destroyed over here. These are historic sites in Myanmar, which have been devastated. Let's go to the next couple of images as well. And this is really frightening and a reminder of how, you know, shanties and shacks in so many parts of South Asia are the most vulnerable. This again in Mandalay, destroyed shacks and buildings. This is the before image when the shacks were intact. People living over here in a shanty, and then over here in the image below, this entire area has been completely obliterated. So just zoom out on this image so that we can see both. This is the before image when you can see that this is intact, and over here it's been completely destroyed. So that gives you an idea of the extent of the damage